In the studio this afternoon with Carol Daniel and Kevin Wheeler, and joined this afternoon on the phone by Walter Olson. Walter's been on before. He runs a terrific website called overlawyered.com. I don't agree with everything he writes, but he finds some great legal cases and writes them up on there. And there are three stories that have crossed my desk, and as soon as I saw them, I thought, oh, we got to call Walter and get him on here. One has to do with the tobacco class action suit. Another one has to do with the McDonald's Made My Kids Fat lawsuit. And another one, well, I'll save that for just a moment here. Walter, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Nice to have you back here. Let's talk first about a federal judge today granting class action status to tens of millions of people who smoked light cigarettes, saying essentially the tobacco companies lied to them, right?
Yeah. And, of course, a lot of your listeners are members of the class and had no idea that a lawsuit was going on in their name, so it might be most accurate to say that he gave the lawyers permission to say that they were representing them.
Right. And when they say tens of millions, they don't really know how many people there were. They're just saying these tobacco companies, Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds and Lorillard and others, duped smokers by large numbers into smoking their cigarettes, right?
Yeah, the argument is that the promotion was misleading, and so everyone who bought the cigarettes was victimized. Now, that's a jump in itself, in that some of those people would probably have bought the cigarettes anyway or would have bought equally expensive brands of cigarettes, and that turns out to be legally important, but that's the theory. You promote it misleadingly, and you owe money to everyone who bought the product.
What was it that was misleading?
Well, in recent years, people have come to be aware of something that I gathered it was no surprise to people in the tobacco business, which is that people buying low-tar and nicotine cigarettes are not necessarily getting a better, i.e. lower, amount of tar and nicotine. People figure out ways of smoking them that compensate for the design and pull more smoke into their lungs than if they were smoking a Camel or another full tar one. And so people can lull themselves into thinking, well, at least I'm not in one of those high tar brands, but depending on how you pinch your fingers around the little air holes and things, you can be doing just as much damage to yourself as if you were.
A lot of suits like this, and the McDonald's suit, which we'll get to in a second, they come down to deceptive advertising rather than deceptive products, right?
Exactly. Lawyers have sometimes butted their head against a brick wall trying to show that a product should never have been put on the market. That sounds too much like prohibition. They have much more success often in arguing, we're not saying the product shouldn't have been marketed, but you didn't tell us about its disadvantages.
In other words, we thought cigarettes were healthy?
Well, and we thought McDonald's food were healthy, yeah.
Or healthier, anyway.
It is healthier than cigarettes, that's for sure. And the argument, yeah, is that I feel cheated because they were not telling us about the big problem with the low-tar cigarettes. If they had told us about it, I wouldn't have switched brands or whatever. And the argument, again, it may not sound convincing for all the people in the class, but depending on the law they're suing under, there are some state consumer protection laws out there where you don't even have to show that you were hurt by it. If you find false advertising, you may have a valid lawsuit.
So is this akin to Coca-Cola finally announcing, or somebody discovering, hey, Diet Coke really does fatten you up?
Well, I think it's different in a couple of ways. There is no doubt that people are better off shedding their delusions about the low tar and nicotine cigarettes, because if you're just going to compensate for the thing, then you're not doing yourself any favor, and you may be lulling yourself, as I say, when you should be thinking of quitting. For most of the people in the class, the question is going to be, was there any economic damage? And I think the cigarette company's defense is likely to be, you don't know which ones are which among the consumers, but most of them would have bought, if we'd never marketed this stuff, or if we'd marketed it, pasted with so many different warnings that no one had any temptation to buy this stuff, these people would have been smoking ordinary cigarettes, which cost exactly the same amount of money, and they're not out of pocket anything. They're mad at us, maybe, but they're not out of pocket anything.
On the other hand, I could see the argument made by the plaintiffs in a case like this. Hey, you know what? I am a tobacco smoker. I do enjoy smoking cigarettes, but I wanted to get a cigarette that wouldn't be as harmful as the regular Marlboro. And so I saw Marlboro Lights, and I thought, well, if it has light in the name, that must be better for me. And so I may not be able to quit smoking, but at least I'm going to wean myself off of some of the bad stuff.
They could make the argument, look, I thought these things were worth more than the straight brands, the Camels or whatever, because they had this health benefit. You know, you've taken away something that I thought was a positive benefit. Compensate me for that. Again, very different legal analysis when you're talking about an individual lawsuit, which no one would bother to sue for a refund on these things. Even a heavy user of them, you know, won't have spent more than a few thousand dollars. Versus a class action in which you're suing allegedly for millions and millions of people, and if you win, you probably lose billions and billions of dollars. And that's where we get to the current litigation. It's all class actions, and if they don't let it go forward as class actions, then it goes nowhere.
Gotcha. Well, now, the class action thing, correct me if I'm wrong, and help me clear this up if I'm confused, that it seems to have been, there seems to have been a real change in the way these suits are qualified as class action. It used to be that, I thought anyway, that you had to have named parties. You had to have so many. And now it's just, okay, if you, because I've received a letter in the past. I think there was a phone company issue. It said, oh, by the way, you're a part of a class action. Was it always that way?
They still need a named client. And when you're talking about something as ubiquitous as light cigarettes, they can go out and shop for exactly the client who they think has the best story, the one that will allege that they wouldn't have bought it if such and such. But that client is a figurehead. And the lawsuits are really by and for the lawyers who file them. And that's been
because all I'm going to get is $1.22 or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
The clients show up, they talk to the newspaper a little bit, and then they fade into the background. It's the lawyers who are running the lawsuit.
Yeah.
And in Illinois, in your listener area, we have the big track record on these light cigarette class actions because the people following it may remember one of these cases was certified as a class action, tried before a judge in southern Illinois, resulted in a gigantic verdict, and then, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when it went up to the Illinois Supreme Court, they knocked it down and said no, it wasn't suitable to be tried that way, and vacated the, I'm sorry, that's legalese, they just threw out the verdict. And that's been the big case so far. There's also one in Massachusetts. This news story from the last day adds an important twist, which is that these lawyers wanted a nationwide class action of all 50 states, and that adds in another reason to think it's not going to go anywhere, which is they had to sue, I believe, under the laws of all 50 states. The problem from their point of view is the states have different laws. No two of them operate in exactly the same way. So the federal courts have already made it pretty clear at the appeals court level, you can't bring in a class action under all 50 states' law if the states disagree with each other as to how to handle the thing. You've got to break it down, one Illinois lawsuit, one Massachusetts lawsuit, and so forth. So that's another reason this is going to get knocked down on appeal.
Gotcha. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX, the Paul Harris Show. Talking with Walter Olson. His website is overlawyered.com. Let's move on to the McDonald's lawsuit. You and I have talked about this a couple of times over the years, and we keep waiting for a judge to throw this thing out of court, but they keep finding judges who say, oh, yeah, keep going.
Well, and this one particular judge, this is the third round, a third time that the judge has said, no, I can't throw it out. We have to hear more arguments, and we have to develop the issues a little more before I know whether I can throw it out. And most of us, I think, had the vague impression, oh, wasn't that stuff all thrown out a couple of years ago? No, it keeps going like some sort of zombie.
And this is the case, by the way, of two kids, teenagers, both, I think, under 18 years old, who apparently ate a lot of McDonald's food and got fat. In one case, I think one of the kids is like 13 or 14 years old and weighed 300 pounds or something like that. And their parents say it was McDonald's fault.
Yeah.
Because as you know, McDonald's has a habit of going around in neighborhoods and forcing quarter pounders down kids' throats against their will.
Or lassoing you and dragging you into the drive-thru.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What happens.
It's like the geese with foie gras. They put the funnel down your throat.
You want fries with that kid?
Yeah, well, the, a again, it's a wonder these haven't been thrown out because they are so much more wobbly than the cigarette cases we were just talking about. At least in the cigarette case we were just talking about, a lot of people who were paying some attention did feel misled. With the McDonald's case, you've got to make the case that the McDonald's clientele had already been looking at the nutrition numbers intensely and using them as the guide to what to order. But because there was one little fact there that should have been in larger print and another one there that they didn't publicize soon enough, they all wound up eating ordering the chocolate shakes instead of the salads.
And wait a minute, is that what they're claiming in this suit, that we went to McDonald's because we were diet conscious, but because of their advertising?
Here we thought we were going to get health food. I know
they use those words, really, health food?
Again, the lawyers who pick out their clients for this can look around until they find a client who will say the sing the words they've written. Not
wow.
Too cynical about it, but the what's so hard in the McDonald's case is to get around the fact that for a long time now, if you've wanted to eat from the healthier half or healthier quarter of the menu, no one was stopping you. You know, they've had the salads and things for years now, and to wind up ballooning up in weight the way these lawyers plaintiffs have done, it's very hard to argue that cutting calories was the main thing on your mind. And so finding some little misstatements here and there, and this is the stuff of false advertising litigation, is to try to find somewhere where it was really 800 calories and they said it was 700. It's just not going to cut it if it made the difference between being Kate Moss and being this guy in Bronx.
Ouch.
So the judge is letting this go forward. Do you think this one has any? I mean, I've asked you this three times in the past, I know. But now do you think it can really go forward?
Well, according to Ted Frank, who's the other poster at Overlord, who's looked into this, he said, at this point, one of the things that is changing the balance of forces is that probably now the lawyers can go forward and demand a look inside McDonald's files. And even though it's probably not going to change the outcome, that's very expensive. It's potentially, you've got trade secret implications and embarrassment issues. And that increases the likelihood that McDonald's may buy them off at some point.
Mm. Okay.
Which is what this was probably all about in the first place, you think? Yeah.
So cynical to say such things.
Well, you know, but you know what? I think that there are actually two things at play here. One is, let's get a big settlement out of McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But I think there are people like John Banjoff and others who want to go out there and they really want to put a major crimp in these companies and try to change the way that they do business and stop them from selling cheeseburgers.
No doubt about that. And for years in this fast food litigation, there have been these two lines of attack. The one that we've just been talking about is done by a previously obscure lawyer who has kind of said, and it's almost endearing, he's basically said, you know, that, well, that this is about money and this is my way of becoming success. And meanwhile, you've got all these other professors and nutritional crusaders and others who are not necessarily in it for the money, which I find in some ways more frightening because they just want to take away choices from us.
Right. They want you to eat nothing but lentils and sprouts, the Michael Jacobson diet.
No more spinach, though.
But it is a good idea to know, and this is not the outgrowth of this particular suit, but to know what the fat content but whether these kinds of people are reading, because it's on the window there at some restaurants, and you can ask for, and the sign is there that says if you'd like the nutritional guidelines, please ask.
Yeah, these people don't care about it. They only care about the numbers that are on the greenbacks that they're getting. And one other thing I want to talk about before we go here, Walter. In Washington, D.C., the National Association of the Deaf is suing the Washington Redskins, the NFL team, because they don't have closed captioning at FedEx Field.
Of the announcements, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the latest in a long campaign or crusade, call it what you will, about how much the Americans with Disabilities Act is going to come into play in order to force translation and closed captioning. There have been lawsuits against movie theaters and I believe movie producers saying you've got to put this in movie theaters, closed captioning. There are arguments against comedy clubs saying you didn't hire a sign language translator, we didn't know when to laugh. And now again with highly visible football team, which they'll argue has the money that it could afford to do this if it wanted to. It'll be interesting to see how it comes out. As a goodwill gesture, in a city like Washington, they may well do it, and who could be sorry if they did it and more people got to enjoy the
football
game.
And I
got
to say, if I went to the stadium with a friend who was hearing impaired, and I can hear the referee explaining what the heck happened at the end of yesterday's game with that bizarre ruling on what was going to happen, which Kevin and I will talk about later on in sports, and I can hear that try to understand it, but my hearing impaired friend can't understand that or doesn't know what was that penalty that was called or what happened on that play. I don't think it would be that much of a problem for a stadium to hire somebody and have them put it up on the scoreboard, just a little quick little brief description of what happened. How hard can that be, really?
Well, as always with litigation, the thing to keep in mind is that precedent's not just going to be for them. It's going to be for smaller athletic events and cultural events. Before long, your little theater troupe that's struggling along to keep out of the red anyway is also going to have a demand like that. So
yeah.
It's a vague law. It doesn't just apply to the big boys. And so it's being watched with concern, I think, by a lot of people who have a lot shallower pockets than the Washington Redskins.
You know what? I've just decided I'm against this because eventually somebody's going to sue me for not closed captioning this show. Walter, as always, thanks for your expertise. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Walter Olson, his website is overlawyered.com. We use him as one of the legal consultants to the Paul Harris Show here on News Talk 1120 KMOX.